Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Save big money at Menards. Gorilla tapes, glues, and adhesives are perfect for jobs around the house, indoors and out. Gorilla Heavy Duty Construction Adhesive has a 100% waterproof formula that provides a secure bond on any surface. From trim work to landscape block to hanging mirrors, it's all purpose and holds in 30 seconds. Pick it up for your project and head to Menards.com to see all of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome to the podcast, everybody. Sorry we missed you last week. First update is D&D is going to be released episode one next Monday. Yes. So if you want to check that out, click the link in the description. It'll take you over to subscribe and check that channel out a few days after this goes up. First topic, big drama. I promise you I'll have more than drama to say about it. There's this guy named Sneeko on the internet who has been kicked off of Twitch and YouTube, I believe, for red pill type stuff in the past. Got into a little internet drama with another creator by the name of Moist Critical, Penguin Z0. And Sneeko had insulted the attractiveness of his girlfriend. They went back, they showed each other their guns, they called each other cucks. It was all interesting. What I think is, and then the internet collapsed upon Sneeko because, he shot first, they say, that style thing. What is more interesting about all of this has been watching Sneeko evolve. I watched his content when he was a younger kid, and I thought he was remarkably insightful and honest and brave for his age. He would go up there and talk about insecurities that he had. He would give takes that were not immediately well-received, or they weren't the popular take at the time, but I detected an authenticity to a young man figuring out who he was, saying things as he saw it, without a tremendous amount of attempt to be cool.
Yeah.
Like, and if he was trying to be cool, he'd be like, I want to be cool. I'm trying to be cool. And so one of the things that I worry about is, I don't worry about this, but I think I see this and I think it's a problem, is that he has since, he started liking the red pill stuff, really fell in with Andrew Tate and enjoys a lot of his content. Andrew, I think Tristan Tate at one point said, you have to carry on our legacy. And he was like, oh!
I mean, that's how I know him, is the red pill guy that's like a minion of Andrew Tate.
And so I think what I relate to some of what he's going through, and here is why. I think that for me and for many young men in their 20s, there is this experience of you find out that one thing that the Matrix told you is wrong. And for me, there were two things. One, the way it told me to get girls to like me was wrong. It told me, and I suffered throughout this through my high school, dote upon her, dream about her,
You're saying movies you saw, what romanticism was.
Yes.
This is the Matrix, what you saw.
The Matrix.
This is like
and to the degree where, like, this was at the beginning. The girl that I liked at one point, like I went into a Dunkin' Donuts and she wouldn't look at me or talk to me. And I didn't use that as a thing to like separate from her. She also had this thing, which we were both young, where then she would like AOL instant message me and be nice to me and then hot, cold me. And I understand that more as an adult. But at the time, it was just like, well, all I'm supposed to do is just love and like her even more. Throughout all of this. I'm the Rock.
Disney Channel movies.
Yes.
And whatever was in the media at the time.
And so I got hot, cold, strung along for a long time. And it was painful. And when I did pull back, she was even nicer to me. And then I read the game and it told me, be a bit more of a challenge. Use this line to tease a girl in a bar. And I did it. And then there were laughters and there was more interest. And I was like, the world is a lie. Everything is fake. Nothing can be trusted.
Yeah.
And the same thing happened with my career, which was, you have to do it. You know, you got to get a 9-to-5. You can be a lawyer or a doctor or this. Those are the top tier jobs, maybe even finance. That was breaking into the scene. And I did this internet thing. There wasn't a single authority figure or adult that actively supported me. I thank mom and dad for like really allowing and not threatening me at all. They had their worries, but like they did not get in my way.
Yes.
But nobody was like, yes. And then I broke out of it, found a life that seemed much more enjoyable than what my peers were doing and even what my parents and all
those people had done. And became a zealot in both fields.
And I became a zealot.
Yeah.
And I was telling people like Sneeko, you're wrong. This is wrong. This is not the way. I was evangelical, knocking on people's doors, bringing them the gospel.
Yes.
And it was only with time that I learned, one, this is not for everyone. The challenges faced by like, one, having, you know, walking up to a girl at a bar is not something everybody wants to deal with. They might want to meet somebody in their social circle in a more relaxed setting. Two, that's not necessarily the best way to meet like a long-term partner, though it can happen. Like what I had thought, like this is what women and men's relationships are these like sunsets and you go out and be really cool at the thing and all like that. That isn't the only way. And that the career stuff is, most people are not made for it. They really aren't. And I didn't realize that there was something in me that had a higher tolerance for the ambiguity and uncertainty of entrepreneurship. So that I felt guilty at times when I had like pushed people and then it wasn't right for them.
Yeah.
All that to say, I understand what it is like to be a young man convinced that everyone else is wrong and screaming at the top of your lungs that everyone needs to change. Thank God for me though, much of that is not on camera. All of those obnoxious things are not being held against me. And when I did start to evolve and change my mind, there was no one to say, yesterday you said this and you were wrong. So I was able to like very gracefully and I think very quickly update, adjust, iterate my beliefs. And one of the difficult things is when you're on the internet and you have an audience and you are publicly shamed, canceled, kicked off of websites, two things happen. One, when you do reverse, people hit you even harder. You know what I mean? They come in, if Sneeko today were to say, I was wrong about this or I lacked nuance, he would be mocked further, which— I mean,
think about the veganism guy.
Yeah.
He got destroyed, right?
Yeah.
His entire community, he became a zealot and telling everybody, debating him, telling him they should be zealot.
Yes, so this cosmic skeptic.
And
I think that probably made whatever happened, his movement in the other direction, very difficult.
Yeah.
Because when you're publicly out there— These are not people in your life. They do not have the same graces that a person in front of you, where there's a fear of violence and a necessity to look at someone. So the things that you're going to receive are much more aggressive. And two, I think that one of the other things that the internet creates is that, whereas before, when in my family, where like I left the way mom and dad and cousins and aunts and uncles did things, but I didn't find like a new community. I took some of my friends and we started our old community, which meant that necessarily we brought our value sets with us. Mm. So like very quickly, we were like, you know, this pickup artist stuff, they lie a lot. And we shouldn't do that because that's not the way that we want to do things. And we were almost benefited by not falling into like whatever they call like a gang of pickup artists with their like top hats and jewelry and a gaggle.
A gaggle is what they're called when you get like more than four.
When you get more than four.
A gaggle of pickups.
Had I fallen into that and I saw communities like that with older men, I probably wouldn't have been so sturdy in the beliefs that I brought over. I probably would have said, well, it's not a lie if it's flirting. That's literally a line in the game. It's not a lie if you're flirting, which I fucking disagree with. but I would have, had that guy been in my life, I probably would have taken his value set and just followed it. And I think this is what happens when the mechanics of the internet are such, you get kicked out of one community, the other community will find you, embrace you, and inculcate you with their ideology.
Well, so now specifically, Sneeko is in this.
So now Sneeko is... says he's a Muslim, even though he doesn't know any lines of the Quran, which, you know, says he's a Muslim. He's just, you know, trying to establish and figure out himself. And I don't know that he would have gone as far into another camp. It becomes camp A, camp B, as opposed to merely not totally A, which is what I had the grace, I keep using the word grace, the luck to do, was just say, you know what, that isn't for me. But I'm not signing up for all this other stuff. I'm going to find my way.
Yeah.
And
bring you along with me.
Yes.
And now he's literally just like saying, jump ship. Yeah.
Yes. And I think that I don't know that that's something that all of his fans will struggle with. But I think as more and more people are on the internet and have more of this stuff that they said potentially thrown in their face, it becomes tougher to go back. It becomes tougher to live with nuance. And it becomes, I think the other thing that is, you know, unlikely to happen is, like, let's imagine that there was a middle ground, even like me, a person like me who, like, I'm not reaching out to Sneeko. I'm not asking him to hang out with me. Like, I don't want to deal with all of his chaos. The person who wants that is the other side, who is recruiting foot soldiers, you know, who wants that. And so, yeah, I just see that there are incentives in place, of course, with the internet that lead to polarization. And this is just me pointing to some of the ones that I hadn't articulated before.
So you brought up another point that you don't think he's going to be incentivized to do his evolution now in this stage with being on the internet, in front of people, or just hiding it. So if you can, like, talk a little bit about that.
So two things that got thrown in his face, which I think is a real shame. I understand why, though. He insulted this guy, the attractiveness of this guy's girlfriend, and has, you know, called people other things. But he also, Sneeko, this is, has an appearance where he talks about watching the girl that he's dating sleep with another guy. I don't know if it was at a sex party or an open relationship type thing. So everyone was more than happy to call him a cuck in an insulting way. And he defended the movie Cuties and said that he thought that it was not in support of, you know, child porn or anything like that, and that the overall message of the movie, which, if you remember, a while ago was on Netflix, I didn't see it, I don't know, was about, you know, moving away from those things and the dangers of that. And I think that, unfortunately, in people's zeal to say this guy is a hypocrite and a bad person, what they've implicitly opened up is whatever hurts him is game. So, like, the cuck insult, the you're the pedophile thing, the you support this, like, all stuff that people excerpted from their dislike of him, they would not make these arguments to other people in their community. And so, like, they hit him with, and I understand, because they're hitting him because he's a hypocrite and he is very judgmental of other people's lifestyle and says that you're not man enough if you don't do it this way. You know, that's sort of in his ethos, and then has this glaring seeming contradiction in terms of his past sex experiences. But unfortunately, I think what that does is that most times shaming people on their way out the door, whether this is, like, you know, you're in an argument or it's on the internet, makes it less likely that a reconciliation ever occurs, even though it is wildly empowering in the moment to just be like, oh yeah, well, you're a And I meant, like, of course, this isn't what the internet would ever do, and I don't know that I would be able to do this in the moment, but I have felt both of these urges in me at times when I'm upset. The one that is like, I can speak true words that can hurt you right now, which is what I want to do. Or I can hold my breath or take some deep breaths and try to find a bigger thing of, like, a deeper truth, which is, I see how hurt you are. I see how lost you are. And you're hurting me, and I don't want to be near you, which is more mature, and I think has more opportunity and creates more space for that person to grow without unpacking the barbs. That's not to say that you can't call out hypocrisy. You can, but when the intent is to wound, which, by the way, I do definitely do, I'm not saying I'm better than this, it just makes it less likely that there will be a reconciliation and polarization continues.
And I mean, if I'm Sneeko, I am not telling people my vulnerable stuff anymore. Like, I'm hiding that. And you mentioned this prior off the podcast that, I'll just act like I've made changes and then, you know, hold all my vulnerable stuff that he had shared years prior, for fear that people use that to, like you said, have barbs against me. And so, the chances that if I were Sneeko, that I grow is just going to be in a way that's, like, pretty inauthentic and just for the camera, and then probably nothing off, like, in a way, not off camera am I growing. I'm just like, when the camera turns on, I act like a different person. When the camera turns off, make sure it's really off, because people will use that shit against you when they hate you.
Or, and I think you never, like, if he was doing sexual experimentation and finding out and testing that open relationship, you say, screw that. I'm going to move to an ideology that appears more defensible, which is the full-on Andrew Tate. I keep my women under control. And you just adopt what has been proven to be a more impregnable ideology that you now need to live by.
Which might not be him either
which may not be appropriate or right for him. Yeah. And I do, you know, I think Andrew Tate is also someone who's clearly has issues with vulnerability. You know, listening to his final message, I talked about this on a past podcast of not being supported when kids picked on him. And when he cracked a kid in the face with his lunchbox, his dad said nothing except bought him to get another lunchbox and told him, I'll buy you as many of these as you need. Is like, yeah, well, I see why Andrew Tate doesn't do vulnerability and instead does violence.
Yeah.
it makes a lot of sense. Because that has worked in his life and vulnerability didn't work and he's not going to reopen that dead end.
And he found a crowd that claps when he does that.
Yes.
Get more lunchboxes.
Get more, and he's found it today as well.
Yes.
Which is unfortunate because he doesn't need it anymore. He's not in that scenario. Well, now in jail, he does need it.
Yes, he's in jail.
Probably he needs that hardness.
Yep.
But he didn't. There was a period of time where he could have softened. Yep. And I'm sorry that he did not take that opportunity.
Right.
Couple other things. We're going to hop around. CoffeeZilla, he made a good point, which I've made about sponsorships before, which is with the FTX stuff. So several influencers promoted FTX. And
Crypto exchange that went down.
Sam Bankman-Fried, it was a scam. And it's understandable to one degree because there was a reasonable expectation that that this was more bank-like in the way that they held deposits. And it was not. They gambled people's money and they lost it. But his point, which I think is very fair, this is true of almost every level of leadership, is that people are unwilling to take responsibility when it comes time to pay the bill. So Meet Kevin went on to CoffeeZilla's, just called in via his phone. He said, well, we got to have some personal responsibility here. Yes, I recommend this, but it's your job to do the due diligence. It's your job to do this. And the best point against it is, which is fine, fair. How much of the affiliate code or of the money that FTX paid you did you distribute to people for their personal responsibility to sign up with your link? None of it? So on the upside, you take full responsibility for influencing them to enter into this contract and to get the money. You're willing to 100% no need to distribute anything else. But when things don't go well, all of a sudden, all of the responsibility is on them. How much money are you going to give back? None? And I think that is an accurate exposition of what is a when it serves me view of personal responsibility, which is I will take all the credit for your decisions when it pays me. And I think this is easy to do as a boss, which is when you're doing well, I'm going to take all the money. I'm not going to redistribute it. There's no bonuses. There's no equity sharing. There's no whatever. And, you know, flip side is you when things go bad, I'm going to make sure that I get paid first, whatever. Now, I guess it doesn't work with bosses because the risk, this is why I'm pausing, the risk on you is like if the business goes to zero, people do get their salaries before, at least this was what would happen at Charisma on Command before I got paid.
Also, their finance gurus, their entire livelihood is about telling you things that will work and you get a reputation that what you say has truth and value to it. Mm-hmm. And they sell courses and advice. And then at the very end, they tell you, you know, you got to do your due diligence, but it's different. Mm-hmm. Because FTX or the lawyers that are suing these influencers also sued Tom Brady and lost. Mm-hmm. And they found that, you know, Tom Brady throws a football. You should do your due diligence. They just got him as a face that you would recognize to get a reputable person to authorize FTX. And now they're suing influencers on YouTube, mm-hmm. a whole litany of them that are finance gurus like me, Kevin, the Iced Coffee Hour guy, and a few others, Andrew Jink. Because they told you FTX was a safe thing. And you've seen in the past with these influencers, right? Like say that you should buy this stock or this company has value because of the information I've acquired over a long year doing this exact thing. I'm an expert in this. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know, if Tom Brady was like, this is how you throw the perfect spiral with this football and you should buy this product, I'd be like, okay, if it doesn't fucking work, I'm coming to you, Tom Brady. Yep. But if Tom Brady's telling me to get a financial product, I'm like, you're just a face that I recognize. And, you know, fortune favors the bold.
That's Matt Damon.
But yeah.
The other, I'm thinking of another way of imagining this. Like, what is the fair way to conceive of it? And I think this is the argument I could make to support Meet Kevin, which is over the years of making free to access content with you know, there's an ad that you pay, but it's free dollar wise. He has been creating brand value. Through his things. FTX says, I would like to purchase from you some of your brand value. And he says, okay, I'll sell you some of my brand value. When FTX goes under, the way that he suffers, which is perhaps appropriate and enough, is that his brand value goes down. And hopefully people don't listen to him as much as they might have, or don't listen to him in the appropriate amount to the money that they lost. And they go, you know what? I'm never listening to this guy again. And he can't command the same rate of what it is to sell his brand value because he doesn't have it. And when you think about it that way, it is interesting. And this is why I don't.
Yeah, that's really fair.
And here's the thing. I think this is a really fair way of viewing it, because it also lines up with another feeling that I have, which is I don't want to do sponsorships. I only want partnerships. Because if what I'm, and I know that this is uncommon for most podcasts, I think we've been able to do it very well with Charisma on Command, with the exception of one or two, is have sponsors that are genuinely additive, so that when they give you money, it's like my association with you isn't me just putting your words in my mouth and selling off a chunk of my brand value. It's like a magical growth of brand value. So one that I would love to do with D&D is D&D Beyond. I think it's a great system. It's better than a character sheet. And if you haven't used it yet, your life will be improved when you sign up for D&D
Beyond.
And
there's a product market player fit.
So then I'm building a brand value with this. They say, hey, can we give you money? My customer goes and signs up for D&D Beyond. It works really well for them. And that adds to my brand value.
Yeah.
As opposed to they signed up for FTX. That destroys my brand value. And so, yeah, this is why I don't want to sell access to the words that come out of my mouth. I want to align myself with partners that I would represent anyway and be compensated for the fact that I've built a megaphone through which I'm happy to spread their message, because I actually think it helps other people.
This is one of the criticisms with another YouTuber, Jake Tran, who would, in the same video, would out people for being scams and then promote a product that was supposed to be anti-scam. So he'd say, this crypto coin is crap and watch out for this, but here's one that really works. Mm. And then, you know, some of them
don't.
The market don't. And he got a lot of backlash for that.
Yeah, I think the issue with
but
this...
But I think that's really cool to, like, because do you think Meet Kevin's brand has gone down enough or in the right direction to represent what his benefit was with FTX?
I imagine it has. And this is the thing. It goes down, as long as it's publicized and this isn't a secret thing that happened, I imagine that people value his advice on average less than they did before this.
Sure.
Which, like, yeah, I'm not... I want this particular FTX one, I do have a greater degree of compassion for.
Yeah.
Because it was fraud, you know, like, and while I do think it's important for influencers to, like, check out the products, there is, of course, when someone is lying to you, not everyone is CoffeeZilla investigative journalism, and there's a need to pay the bills. But, you know, for me, I've been lucky enough and prefer to, I say lucky, but also by design, built a product that I have much more control over, so that I, like, if there was a fraud, it would have to be on, like, the membership plugin that, like, stole people's emails or something. You know, I've limited the window by which my customers can be taken advantage of, because I've made the product, and there's only a handful of, like, third-party services that I use that could potentially exploit them.
Right.
So that is, yeah, make your own product. you have better control over, the value of it. All right, next up, J.K. Rowling. So I've been listening to her podcast. I haven't gotten all the way through it. I don't think this is a thing that I spoke about, but she has this line, which is that she understands that the basis of her oppression to be her sex class. And she's got, broadly, the reasons that I've heard her describe, though she may have others, is that, one, when she was writing Harry Potter, the publisher told her, we need you to use JK and not Joanne because little boys won't buy a book written by a woman, which I think is a shame if true, though maybe it wasn't true. I'm not sure.
I'll be honest. When I first saw it, I thought it was J.R.R. Tolkien.
J.R.
So she kind of rid off that a little bit.
I thought it was R.L. Stein. I thought that was the thing that people did.
Yes.
You know, but that was what they told her. And that was why they did it. E.B. White or whatever.
Yeah, they had a lot of those at that time.
And then the other one was the abuse that she suffered at the hands of her first husband, I believe, who beat her. And at one point, like, you know, she like left the house and he held her child for the night before she got the cops to come back. And she, you know, suffered at his hands. And when I listen to it, I get the distinct impression, well, she says it, that she understands that the reason that happened to her because she was a woman and that her oppression is because of that. But when I'm thinking, I go, well, would your male son have been abused by your dad, by your husband? I think he would have. Like, I've been abused. You know, I've had men sexually abuse me. I don't understand the basis of my abuse to be my sex class. Though if I were a woman, perhaps I would, because that's being encouraged. And I think, unfortunately, while I think that there are, I'm not going to disagree with her on certain things, but like that is low resolution thinking, I think, for her. I think a higher degree of resolution would reveal that there are predators and people who hurt, and there are people who have been hurt by them more broadly, and that they can be men or women.
And you can find safer spaces by having more multivariate analysis of what occurred.
Exactly. That's the word. A more multivariate analysis. And so unfortunately, when like some of the things that she says, while I don't agree, there's some of her tweets, I go, yeah, that sounds reasonable and everybody hates her. But then there's other things where I go, she says, if we allow trans women, which are biological men who are now presenting as women, into female restrooms, that opens the door for any man to just become a predator. And I feel like that is, to me, that strikes me as such emotional thinking. Because when I think through that, I go, there's a lot of predators in the world, men on men, you know, men suffer assaults far more often from other men than men to women. You have to draw it at like domestic abuse. In fact, the person most likely to abuse you if you're a woman is your husband or your boyfriend or something like that. It is not a man who is coming into a restroom, and it is not a man who was perturbed by the lack of a door at the airport who now is, you know, like a vampire when invited inside now with the declaration of being a trans woman now has free reign to abuse. It seems like deeply emotional thinking and reasoning
and reductive.
It's
to the point of missing it. And actually you're like, not like, even if we gave you bathrooms, can't have trans women or men in it, you're not safe.
And she cares. I get this strong impression that because of her trauma, she cares and is more fearful about harming women than she is about harming humans. There is a class of people to whom she is obvious, and I think we all have this to degrees, more connected. And it creates blind spots for her, where in order to protect women, she will risk other people. And I don't mean I don't reduce her, like some people do, to like not caring about trans people at all. I don't think that's true based on just the 4 hours that I've listened to of her in the podcast. But she seems to have a class of people that matter more as a result of her own experiences. And when I listen to her, I think that she would be, while she was at times very clear, cogent, and restrained, I think she would be sharper, though probably not sharp enough to stop all of the accusations of transphobia and TERF, whatever, because I think that those are I think those are a mirror image of her, which is they've suffered abuse in their life. And then anyone who tripwires their sense of, oh God, this person is on that side, immediately is the enemy.
Wow.
So I see it. I do see that occurring. But again,
in that worldview, it's frustrating for me because I want to be like not abused and hanging out with these fucking really bad people. And I have to be across the fence in this. And I'm like looking through and just like, it's all safe over there. Mm-hmm. And I'm not invited because of my genitalia or what she determines a biological male is. And I think that sort of misses
the
point.
I want to go to the women's bathroom. There's pee all over the man's seats. And I don't pee on the seats. And I want to come in and clean
I pick up the seat. I think I've demonstrated. I mean, I have a special.
I'll sit and pee. Yeah. I just don't want to go to the one that smells.
Yeah, it's crazy. I have a special class in movies. I hate when the horse dies. I think we should sacrifice more humans to let the horse live. I don't know.
I don't know what you're talking about, how that relates.
She is a special class of humans called women that get to. She will sacrifice other things for, namely
not sacrifice,
men.
I don't want to be too broad in my construction, but it is very obvious that that is where her attention goes. How are women being impacted?
Yes, my worldview is on that horse.
Yes,
and I'm seeing it ride into battle, and I see it go down when a human could have gone down and put up a shield.
You know what's funny is what you just described is
swimsuit check, sunscreen check, phone charger check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
My girlfriend goes to, she's in animal rescue, and she goes to these events where these people will bleeding heart, you know, SOS, 2-week-old kitten needs bottle help. Oh my God. And then she meets them in person, and their disdain for the homeless is and this is consistent. And I actually think, I think that there's like an interesting trauma that drives people to various professions, and we can discuss and have a fun time of what some of those are that I've sort of cataloged in my life.
Yeah,
but I think animal rescue is I can't deal with people, and I've been harmed by people, and
absolutely,
and I need to hang out with children and or animals.
I feel this in myself.
Who I project all of the goodness of the world onto, and I take all of the badness. I project it all onto people.
Yep.
And that's not to say every animal rescue. I don't think that, but I think that is a broad type of trauma that is you are more likely to find in that community.
Yes.
A disdain for people. They're the people who, my faith in humanity has been restored. They're the type of people that need to watch a video to have faith in humanity.
Yeah.
We
should go into one of the events, ask them questions about the homeless. Just don't tell them if it's a cat or a human.
Yes. So I've got a bunch of random things. Let me see here. I've mentioned this before. So we watched a video on FaZe Clan, which I thought was remarkable. Right now, you know, FaZe Clan, I've seen and heard their logo, and I've seen the houses that they have in some of their videos.
What is FaZe Clan?
FaZe Clan is that's a great question. I barely know. It's a company of people who are video game players that was attempting to be a media company for Gen Z, the first company for Gen Z by Gen Z, you know, type of, a thing. And, they are a collective of people that I believe almost all of whom got big playing some sort of video game.
It's about 5 people from my understanding that were
5. It's way more.
To start, 5 friends that were streamers online who were popular video gamers that combined into a clan or a group to help cross-promote each other. Yeah. And for, I think, a while was really beneficial that they became one solid unit of a brand so that they could push their merchandise their products prior.
Is what is interesting is that there's this thing that I've seen happen in business, which is, and I see it as an investor, the level of unsophisticated investing, of which I even participate in from time to time. I just go, I don't know. You know, like, I trust you. I trust this person, they invested in, I'll follow, I think is fairly common. And there was this like magic valuation that started occurring with FaZe Clan, which was disconnected to their ad revenue, their sponsorship deals, and their this. But you put them all together, you got a finance type to go on CNBC and talk about how this is the first Gen Z company.
I think we skipped a couple steps. So let's just say, for the viewer, they did this, and then Suits were attracted to an investment
Suits
opportunity and said, whoa, you guys are doing all these views.
Yeah.
What if?
What if we went on, promoted you as this PR thing of Gen Z, we're going to bring Snoop Dogg on as an advisor, we're going to throw a big party.
Yeah.
We're going to, and it's like, and it was all, it was a lot of stuff like that. We're going to get a house and a party.
More influencers. We'll go past video games.
We're going to media. And it's like, it was like the Donda chart, you know, submarine. And, but
technology.
I'm exaggerating, but there was this sprinkle of magic onto step two. I'm just going to use more references. What is the South Park thing? Step one, underpants. Get underpants.
Are you talking about
step two? Question
Butters,
mark.
Butters.
Step three, profit. It's a step two question mark.
Yeah.
And that's what this sort of was. And the other interesting thing, which I've mentioned, is there's these SPACs that are sort of like these, I guess they're just aggregates of money that is fundraised that trades at a certain value. It's a public company so that you can avoid some of the scrutiny that you would need to do to launch publicly.
All right. Can I tell you my interpretation? You tell me if I'm wrong. I don't know if you're an expert. Of what a SPAC is.
Okay.
Because I didn't know what it was. And from my perception of watching the same video, which was it is a larger company which has a stock ticket, like Apple APLY already went through SEC regulations. And they empty that and they're able to put
Money in it.
Yes.
And then they purchase with that public company a private company.
Private company. Yes. They smash into this thing that's already passed through SEC regulations. And this smaller company doesn't need to get SEC regulated.
I'm sure that there's minutiae there. But yes, it allows you to circumvent a lot of that stuff to bring private to public. Okay. The other thing with these SPACs is that they have a very similar shape, which is if you look at the price chart of the trading, it's like it's got this much money
They go public.
Yeah, so it's got this much money, yada, 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 yada. Nobody's buying, et cetera. There's lockups on whether or not people can exit the SPAC. They launch, there's an uptick of like, oh my God, it doubled. And then there's a crater 90% down from the original thing. And that is exactly what a SPAC that I was invited to looks like. It was what the FaZe Clan
exactly what the FaZe Clan did, which is prior to the launch, they were a SPAC put into another larger company that was purchased up. They had a launch party. They got influencers. They talked about...
They were talking $300 million to $1 billion valuation. Okay? They're at $30 million right now. $30 million to give you an idea. I think if I worked on Charisma on Command for a year, I think I could get a $30 million valuation. Not right now, but I think if I put effort in for...
You don't even have Snoop Dogg.
Yeah.
What if you had Snoop Dogg?
If I made another course and like set up, these are easy. If I made a content machine and another course, which that is way easier said than done.
This is the question mark.
$30 million. Well, but again, there's like a plan. They had a fucking plan. We have revenues. We are profitable. We don't have a trillion employees.
Yeah.
And it's just interesting because I've always been in a different world of business that didn't have the fairy dust. This business was like, how much money in, how much money out, what's the valuation you can multiply? That's the world that I've lived in. But there is this other world of magic business.
Is
where you do the fairy dust, you have a launch party, and some people make money off that. It's the people who aren't locked up because a lot of the employees have a deal, which is, okay, when we go public, you can't sell for 9 months. And it seems like there's an implicit, or 6 months or 3 months.
Incentive.
There's an implicit understanding that this is not going to be worth anything then. And that the people that get out at that first pop when we offer to the market.
Oh, FaZe Clan's going public. I love FaZe Clan.
Yes.
I'll buy it.
That's the people that are selling are the sharks. It's a bummer that happens a lot is what it seems like.
So when are we going public with Charisma on Command, dude?
We ain't. talked about sponsorships. Oh, okay. So I want to keep the person that I'm describing a bit vague here, but there's a person in a story that someone close to me shared, is what I'll say.
Okay.
There's a person that I heard about in their interaction with him. No, it's not you.
Sick.
And in that interaction, a lot of the words like, I'm looking out for you and I want what's best for you and I want to make sure that this is a win-win. That style of thing was said. And then it was, as you know, I unpacked it with this person, the behavior was not that. It was very confusing, but the behavior was extremely self-centered, and those words were revealed to be smoke screens, covering up an incredibly selfish decision that this other person was making while telling this other person that they were really there for them. And I was reminded of something that I think is dangerous, which is if you read like How to Win Friends and Influence People, it tells you that you need to see things from other people's perspective. You need to find ways to help them get what they want. You need to speak in, because that's how other people are moved, and that's what's useful. If you read that book and you take that at a very surface level, you become a dangerous person to be around because you now have the tools to speak in such a way that other people are moved, influenced, and tricked without pulling in the actual care for them getting their needs met. And this is what happened in this particular situation. So I'm sorry that I can't be more specific. And it's incredibly confusing for other people because, you know, the words that you're hearing are, I want what's best for you. I want this, that, and the other thing. You know, I'm just doing this for you. And the behavior doesn't match that. And don't do that. So like How to Win Friends and Influence People is good. But what's really actually the much harder thing is to genuinely care that you are helping other people meet their needs and you're not merely using those phrases to get them to act in the required direction for you. Just a little thing. What else do we have?
J.K. Rowling, Sneeko, do you want to talk about Mount Walsh? Oh,
I have a tough one. This one is freaky. I'll tell you this one. Anthony Padilla did a really interesting conversation with someone who was two people who were involved in human trafficking. So the first thing that I'll say is that up until watching this video, I've heard human trafficking. It means, it's not as gentle as the word sounds. It means like really aggressively or even not aggressively, like coercing people into selling their bodies for sex or whatever, getting them wrapped up in drugs, like just
slavery.
It's not with the chains. It's like with psychological chains often. And maybe I imagine that some human trafficking might have chains in other parts of the world. What was fascinating, I'll give you the broad story, is that I think this woman was 19 at the time, rough relationship with the family, of course. This woman at work is really nice to her. And for her birthday, she takes her out to the club. They have a great time. She's getting a table. Yes. And by the way, I think it's this woman's birthday, or I don't know whose birthday. At the end of the night, the woman says, "You owe me $600." She says, "What do you mean? I thought that this was your party, or I thought you were..." No. And she get in the car. She's got an outfit for her. She's got a thing. She drives her to the strip club, and she says, "You got to go in there, and you better earn me $600. Starts to protest, says, "I know where you live. I will kill your dad if you don't go do this."
Or this, like, is ridiculous, I bro. Know.
So insane, Henry, insane. She goes in. Immediately, there's a guy who's there. He's nice to her. Gives her 5 drinks. Loosens her up. She goes in and makes $600 doing dances. Comes out. Woman takes the money. And she said she felt good about it at that point. She's like, "Wow, I did it." You know, like, and again, the psychological destruction that I understand.
How far away you've gotten from just a night out.
I understand this in my own life, man. And if I wasn't human trafficked, I was abused. If I didn't live it and I didn't know what the mind is capable of doing, I would go, "Oh, you could have, you should have." I fucking get it. She was then taken to a hotel where she was given drugs. I don't know if she was drugged more than, but at this point, the difference is like, there were two men in the room. She was given drugs and she says she won't use the R word because she doesn't like using it, which, by the way, I fucking understand. And, that was the first night, and they assaulted her, but you can use a worse word than that if you want to imagine it. And then that went on for a while, and the way that she started to get out of it was, now she's working at the strip club. She's like been, that's her life now, and I don't know exactly the relationship. The cops have a training session where they go to the strip club owners, and they teach them about human trafficking, and they teach them what to look for. And the strip club owner says, I think I have a girl like that. They call her in, and they say, well, sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. Pause on that. Before this, she talks to a client, and she tells her how she got into it, and the client's like, oh my God, that's not right. So they have a plan where he's going to drive up to the curb because she's not allowed to, like, they control your movement. She's not allowed to walk out with the client. She's not allowed to do this.
They got eyes on her all the time.
They have psychological control. You know what I mean? Like total, and the door's open though. People come in and out, but the psychological control is pitch perfect. Drives up with his car. She goes running out of the thing, hops into the car, speeds away, and he buys her a motel for 30 days.
Like, wow.
Yeah. So she gets out, she calls a guy that she used to know who was really nice to her. And she doesn't know anyone. She can't go to her family. She's too ashamed at this point. The things that she's done make her unable to go back. She calls a guy, and he comes, and he then pimps her, which I thought was remarkable. And this is the thing that got me. The odds that you randomly call a stranger and that person is a pimp are, I don't know, but it's like, it's 1,000 to 1. It's 2,000 to 1. It's 10,000 to 1. I don't know what the exact number of pimps in the world is, but it is not most people. Maybe it's at worst case 200 to 1, right? There was something in her clearly that was, and I don't, this is no blame at all, that was a magnet and was moving towards that, and that experienced love as being used. And so this person that she could trust was the exact trust that she had learned to grow up with, which is that if you're using me, you're loving me, you know? And
Did she say this, or is this your analysis? No, this is now my analysis. Because that is a crazy thing, that she found one person she contacted, and it was a pimp that then pimped her out.
And to me, that is not random. And again, this is based on, I was not in this situation at all, but I have been abused, and I understand what your detection radar system can look for in the world without you knowing it, when you think that you're escaping it, and what can you, you are alienated. Yes. What feels right and safe is the situation that you are
just
used
escaped
to.
From.
Yes. So she gets this guy, and then he starts doing the same thing with her. And then finally the police, you know, that's where that part that I had told you previously. And what's remarkable again is, which I relate to, she's sitting there and she's reading. She said, just read the pamphlet. She reads the first page. She gets you in debt. Does this, the other thing. Controls your emotion. She goes, oh my God, this is the first woman that I met. And Anthony says, well, what about your current boyfriend? Did you put that together? And she says, no. I didn't put that together at all.
Did they put that, they put it together
she
on
has,
the podcast?
No,
or
no, she has,
prior?
No, no. She has now. But okay. She's like, at the moment that the cops were doing it, I could only relate it to the other situation which I had escaped. But I defended the current guy that I was with. I defended him. I loved him so much. I loved him so much that I just couldn't. And I was like, oh my God. And I think I share that one because it was a powerful story that I found was crazy. The other thing, there's a number of things. There were two people who shared their story. One was a 16-year-old guy. And the other was a 19-year-old her. The guy who did it to the 16-year-old is serving 30 years in jail because he was a minor and he had sex with a minor. The guy that did it to the 19-year-old is barred from going into strip clubs in Toronto because there's really no way to get this charge to stick. Because how do you prove psychological coercion? How do you prove...
This is her boyfriend.
The first people. Ex. They told her she had to. She didn't have to. They put her in a car. They made her feel uncomfortable. They gave her 5 drinks, which she was allowed... You know what I mean? Like, what is the charge that you can get to stick? And I think this is what's difficult for people and the legal system, clearly, is to understand the power of psychological control that can be exhibited, especially, and this is over people that come from a broken background, which she, I don't know how broken, she didn't elaborate much, but a fractured relationship with her mother at the least, which made her drawn to this particular woman who was kind to her and then mean to her and then kind to her and then mean to her.
Is there a... Renaissance at some point where she heals?
I think she's going through it now. She's, you know, sharing her story. She's trying to prevent these sorts of things from happening. And, you know, there was another thing that she said is that or I don't know if she said it or if I wrote this down. There's a couple of things that I wanted to just say. One is it's just like, wow, we get the guy who does it to the 16-year-old, but the 19-year-old we just have no recourse for. As if, and I'm not, to be clear, I'm not saying the guy shouldn't have gone to jail for a 16-year-old. As if the level of cognitive growth is so tremendous from 16, 17, 18, 19 that one is a heinous crime and one is a nothing. Is yep. Like, yeah, we don't have a good way to handle that. Two, you need to legalize sex work and regulate it, because when you don't, this is what happens with every industry. Like, you want to have alcohol legal? Well, we don't like alcohol. Well, then you get Al Capone. You know, like, what? Pick your poison here. People yeah. are going to purchase sex. That will never, ever, ever stop. You need to legalize overage. You know, and we can figure out what that age needs to be. But like, for adults, that needs to be a legalized, regulated industry, because you get worse when it's driven underground. By,
yeah, it's
by
scary these types. For when I hear that, it just seems scary to be like, we need to do this.
And, well, I feel the same thing with most drugs.
Yeah, it's like that seems like a giant decision
to legalize like, it.
Yes,
look at alcohol, man. I mean, geez, how much we tolerate from alcohol, but we wouldn't consider legalizing sex work when there's other examples of places like Amsterdam that have done it, that you can, you know, with levels of protection. Like, it's not like this is an experiment that hasn't been run.
Just like a world where it's every,
you don't have to. Well,
but yeah.
Oh, to be clear,
who is it me to tell people?
I don't mean legalizing what these people did to this girl.
I mean legalizing
like the sex work aspect of it, with check-ins and STD tests and, you know, psychological profile people who come in and like, you know, that sort of a thing.
Yeah.
Because you can make it safer.
Yes.
And then there was another thing that, which is that this sense guilt being the lever that is pulled, the getting in debt and that resonance. To be clear, this is my own addition. I know this feeling of owing somebody something. I've carried it my whole fucking life. And I think that is what made me susceptible as a young boy to this type of a thing.
Yeah.
Which is I owe you. I feel guilty very consistently. And that is the playbook, is to activate guilt, because the type of person who
that
falls
works
for this,
for it. Yep.
is the type of person who can't feel, that's not my shit. That's not my fault. You didn't tell me. You owe me an explanation. You owe me an apology. But when for people that are hairline sensitive to guilt, somebody telling you that you owe them something and any ambiguity there is, they're right.
Yeah.
And I, you know, the way that is ruthlessly exploited. And then the further thing of shame, which they then take and they get you to do all this stuff, and they even hurt you even more, and that makes you less likely to seek help.
Yeah.
That what they did the first night with her probably made her even less likely, that they made it worse for her, makes it harder to get out. I thought that all of that was telling and important to understand from a psychological perspective of how abuse occurs in the world.
Yeah, I really want to know like what occurred in the family setting. For
you could ask her to come on.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah,
it was crazy. So I'm seeing if I wrote down anything else. And yeah, that it's the second largest criminal industry in the world, $150 billion of human trafficking.
Wow,
that's worldwide. But yeah, it's a lot. And again, these are estimates. It's not like you can go audit the books of this type of a thing. And this is related, though. I wrote it down separately. I watched Cole Sprouse.
I did as well.
On YouTube, talk to Diary of a CEO. One, the guy is sharp, mm-hmm. remarkably sharp. And I was like, how did he get this? Because he talks about having a narcissistic mom who put him in showbiz at the age of 8 months and, you know, and all of the issues that created.
Who is Cole Sprouse?
He's the guy from my generation, from Big Daddy. He was the little kid Julian in Big Daddy. From your generation, he was on a Nickelodeon show or something.
Yeah, and he's a twin.
And he's a twin, which is why he was allowed to be in this, because you can get more hours out of twins because there's child labor laws that say each child can only work so many hours a day, so you can do more filming.
So if you know, in the 90s, there was a bunch of twins in movies, yes, which now makes the whole magic of Hollywood seem a little bit dirty. Yeah. But yeah, go ahead.
Well, again, it was a well-intended thing, which is you want a kid in a movie. We'd like to have a movie that doesn't just have people over the age of 18, and yes, you can only work so many hours, and that's, you know, whatever, the Olsen twins and the this twins and the that twins, yeah, and they play a single person.
Yeah.
And I was just trying to figure out, I was like, why did this guy get it? He did some therapy, but he also describes having, like, how his dad, eventually he wound up with his dad. And it seems like the value of, you know, of course, having two great parents is great, but the delta between no good parents and one good parent is incredible. Like, I don't know what else to attribute it to based on having listened to him talk, but, you know, he's had some opportunities to go to therapy. He's done some other things, but he seems like he's got his head very well screwed on his shoulders, given what he also describes as the narcissism of his mother to put him in these situations, and the churning out of child actors, and the not physical, but emotional tumult and confusion, and you're the breadwinner for your family, and we need you to do this, and the theft of your childhood from you. To come out the way that he has, I'm like, I guess having, and I've seen this, having one good parent, having one person who can model empathy, care, being with you is incredible. And I think that's a Gabor Mate quote as well, which is like, what separates a difficult experience from lifelong trauma is one adult in the room, just one adult who can be with you through the experience,
yeah,
or the reliving or the recounting of it. But really interesting interview, highly recommend it.
And so that relates to the previous story, because he seems like he had that in his father, and you're wondering about the girl in the human trafficking story, if she could have had one, or
not that I wonder about her, but it's just it's remarkable, because I know of people in similar situations where they don't have one. And the depth of confusion that they struggle with is
immense.
It's not like he has half of theirs. It's infinitely more confusion that these other people have. And it seems trite to say, I watched a guy, but I think he's right. His name is Danny Morell on Instagram. He says that to children, their mother and father are the masculine and feminine representation of God in the world. Mm-hmm. And so you're, you know, if you at least have God kind of on your side, it means a lot in the universe. But if God never shows up for you, and what I mean by that is not to say that you need a Christian God, but what I mean by that is that this life, this experience loves you and cares for you and want what's good for you and is not against you in an attempt to break, abuse, and use you for its own benefit, your life is going to be radically different than someone who doesn't feel that feels that this, that they are here to be used, abused, taken advantage of.
Exactly. God's love comes through using you, trading, in another way.
And the best, you know, best case outcome, if you don't do therapy, is you find a way for the universe to use you, and you exchange money for love for the rest of your life. Or, you know, like there are degrees of healthiness that are on that scale if you didn't have parents. And I'm not saying that you're doomed forever. But yeah, it's like such an advantage to have good parents.
And it's important to recognize your operating system.
Yeah.
As like that, if these are your gods, like look back at what your patron saints taught you.
Well, this is, and I think,
which is personally what I've been doing as well.
Yeah. I don't want to, like, we talked a little bit about women versus men with J.K. Rowling, but the privileges that people have, you know, people will talk about skin color or whether you're straight or gay or whether you're this. And I don't think any of them boil down to the internal experience you have of life, the general quality that you see it as. So I don't want to externalize it. But if I did have to, it seems like broadly the love of mom and dad in a way that is lower on the narcissistic scale, lower on the emotionally abusive scale, higher on the amount of space that you are given to experience the full gamut of human emotions without being threatened with being a pariah from the family if you get angry or sad or hurt or whatever. That is one of the biggest privileges that people can have, along with Like once you've got your material goods taken care of, food, water, shelter, and health, that would be the next one that I would put on the list of foundationally important to feeling good in your life.
And it's really hard to quantify.
Yes.
So people go, you're a guy.
Yeah. And guess what? Yeah. You didn't get to write that on your resume. You don't get to, you know, there's no special programs to make sure that we have 50%
Mom
of
and dad
CEOs
were really abundant in their experience of emotions while I was growing up. I'm going to be a great employee here.
Yeah. And anyways, well, not just that, that we don't have a higher degree of tolerance and assistance for people that didn't get that, but we do have higher degrees of tolerance and assistance, you know, for in our sister's workplace. If you're a woman, you get to take special confidence training that men are not invited to, which is like, what about the people that
need
are
confidence.
Orphans? What about the male orphan who is, you know, who needs confidence? No, he doesn't get to come because it's the general ways that we are splitting groups today, I do not think are the best ones to do it by.
Right.
And you wanted me to talk about what is a woman? Is that right?
So that was a question on our podcast. If you want to do, our Patreon, if you want to move over to Patreon now, unless you have anything
else.
We do
it on Patreon. No, I'm happy. So the D&D comes out on Monday. Hope that you guys check it out. I'm working on it. It's actually, check it out. I'm working on episodes 1, 2, 3, and 4. I'm really, really enjoying episode 4, which is what I wanted to say. So, but I hope you get to episode 4. Episode 1 is good. It's got the, graphics, it's got the Trump voice, it's got all that kind of stuff. So please take a look, check it out. And I'm very excited for you guys to see what we've got. Cool. Patreon, I'm going to talk about, I guess, what is a woman? Because somebody asked about that. Anything else?
I've got about 8 questions today. And what is a woman is one of them. And then I don't know the others off the top of my head, but they're deep.
If you want to join, we got more on the Patreon. It helps us keep the podcast going. So we appreciate you guys. Either way, thank you very much. See you next week.
Peace.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.